This study is going to be on the message of the sanctuary, part A. The message of the sanctuary, part A. Interestingly, in the Hebrew language, there is only one word for both sin and sin offering. In the Hebrew language, there's only one word for sin and sin offering. So closely were the two in thought in the Hebrew concept. Let me give you an illustration. Turn to Genesis 4, verse 7. Genesis 4, verse 7. This has to do with the story of Cain. And notice what God says to him. If thou doest well, shalt thou not be accepted? And if thou doest not well, sin lieth at the door. Sin lieth at the door. Now that word for sin, here in Genesis 4:7, is the same word that you find in Leviticus 4:3. Turn to Leviticus 4:3. If the priest that is anointed do sin according to the sin of the people, let him bring for his sin which he hath sinned a young bullock without blemish unto the Lord for a sin offering. Same word. Sin offering or sin. The concept mingled together. And isn't this the picture in the New Testament? 2 Corinthians 5:21. What does it say there concerning Christ? Made to be sin for us. But what was he also? A sin offering. But Paul states it, he was made to be sin as the sin offering for us, that we might be made the righteousness of God in him. So the New Testament even goes so far to say that the great sin offering Christ was made to be sin. In fact, the picture of the sanctuary services is that this sin offering was wholly substitutionary, completely substitutionary. Turn to Leviticus 1:4. The third verse we can read for context. If his offering be a burnt sacrifice of the herd, let him offer a male without blemish. He shall offer it of his own voluntary will at the door of the tabernacle of the congregation before the Lord, and he shall put his hand upon the head of the burnt offering, and it shall be accepted for him to make an atonement for him. Now notice that language. This offering was to be made as an atonement for him, and it was to be accepted for him. And he was to put his hand upon the victim. Now I'm going to try to illustrate it in the safest way possible. And I'm going to use this piano because that's the safest way, all right? He was to put his hand, but what the Hebrew word is, he was to lean his whole weight upon that victim. Leaning heavily on that victim, fully. In other words, if I could get my feet off the ground and rest on that, that would give the idea that he was to rest wholly upon that victim. His whole weight. Because what? He was dependent upon this. It was to be accepted for him, and it was to be made, it was to make an atonement for him. Now, what was transferred? Sin? The guilt of sin? The punishment for sin? What do you say? What's the answer?
Sin. Sin. Of course, if sin is transferred, then any other...
Guilt is transferred. Condemnation is transferred. So one thing is certain. What was not transferred? The nature that produced the sin. The nature that produced the sin was not transferred. The offerer, after he had laid his whole hand and put his full weight upon the victim, and had it accepted for him, that individual left with the same nature that he came. His physical nature, the thing that produced it, he still left with it. But he had an atonement made. What's atonement? At-one-ment, of forgiveness. This opens the whole problem of sin. What is sin? What really is sin? Now, we can use the common definition, sin's the transgression of the law, but let's go and just analyze carefully. What is sin? First, let me ask you the question, what is God? Not who is God. What is God? Turn to Deuteronomy 32, verse 4. What is God? Not who is God. Deuteronomy 32, verse 4. He is the rock. His work is perfect. All his ways are judgment. A God of truth and without iniquity, just and right is he. Without answering the question, who is he? God is a spirit. But I'm not interested in that. What is he? He's a God of truth. He's without iniquity, just and right. Now then, what is sin in the light of what God is? Sin is a deviation from what God is. Turn to John 8, 44. John 8, 44. Ye are of your father the devil. The lust of your father ye will do. He was a murderer from the beginning and abode not in the truth. What did he do? God is what? A God of truth. And what did the enemy? He abode not in the truth. And then he deliberately, what? Rebelled against that which God stood for. Justice and righteousness. Then what really is sin? Sin is a rebellion against God, a deviation from God that leads to separation from God because you can't stay in God's presence and want the truth if you are wanting to step aside from the truth. In other words, when I sin, I choose to respond to the condition in which I was born. When I sin, I choose to respond to the condition in which I was born. And how was I born? It says there in the 51st Psalm, verse 5, in iniquity did my mother conceive me, or in sin did my mother conceive me. And when I choose to sin, I choose to yield to that condition in which I was born. The act is sinful. The result is guilt. When and where is the sinful act recorded? Now, when I commit a sin, at what point is it recorded and where is it recorded? The sin is recorded the moment of committal. And where is it recorded? Turn to Ecclesiastes 5, 6. And I'm going to have to give you another text because on Ecclesiastes 5, 6, I can only draw a temporary conclusion. In Ecclesiastes 5, 6, suffer not thy mouth to cause thy flesh to sin, neither say thou before the angel that it was in error. Wherefore should God be angry at thy voice and destroy the works of thy hands? Don't say before the angel that it was an error. Who's going to hear it? Wherefore, as it says there, should God be angry at thy voice? When I commit sin, there is an immediate record of that sin before God. Now, what is that record? How is that record kept? The Scripture says what? In what kind of a record does God keep things? Books. That's what he calls it, books. Now, I suppose today, if we were writing it for the first time, we would say that God's keeping it on floppy disk. In other words, we say that the whole thing is recorded there on the computer of heaven using our modern terminology. In other words, it's written down before God. It's absolutely recorded. That which we do, the sin, it's all down there because it's going to come into judgment with every secret thing whether it's going to be good or whether it's going to be evil. And so what we can say simply, and we'll add to this diagram up here, that there are books. In which the records of our deeds are recorded. Now let me show you how the books are further amplified so that the conclusion that I'm drawing can be sustained in Scripture. Turn to Malachi 3:16. And you're familiar with this because there are some other books that are involved. Malachi 3:16. Then they that feared the Lord spake often one to another, and the Lord hearkened and heard, and a book, singular, of remembrance was written before him for them that feared the Lord and that thought upon his name. So beside the books, we have a book, all recorded. Everything is taking place before God. Now, the provisions of the sanctuary. The provisions of the sanctuary involve sin offerings. Turn to Leviticus, the 4th chapter. Leviticus, the 4th chapter. And before I go into this, I want to ask you a question. Was the sanctuary service ever given to Babylon? Was it ever given to Medo-Persia? Was it ever given to Grecia? Was it ever given to Rome? But did they have sanctuary services? Yeah, they have. God gave to his people, Israel, the sanctuary by which he was going to show how sin was going to be taken care of. Now, if a Babylonian sinned, the record was put in the books. How only could that Babylonian find his way out? He would have to embrace the sanctuary message of Israel. A Medo-Persian, and so forth. He would have to embrace the way that God had designed in the sanctuary for sin to be taken care of. Does God have several ways to take care of sin? One way. And that way was where? Thy way, O God, is in the sanctuary. Now think this through carefully. Let's go now to Leviticus, the 4th chapter, and read the picture. Second verse. Speak unto the children of Israel, saying, if a soul shall sin through ignorance against any of the commandments of the Lord concerning things which ought not to be done, and shall do anything against them, then you find in the 13th and 14th verses what was to be done if the whole congregation sinned. And if the whole congregation of Israel sinned through ignorance, and the thing be hid from the eyes of the assembly, and that they have done somewhat against any of the commandments of the Lord concerning things which should not be done and are guilty, when the sin which they have sinned against it is known, I commit certain acts. I may not be conscious that they're sin. But does that mean they're not recorded? Every sin, everything is recorded in the books of heaven. There is nothing that escapes the record of those books. Then if I become conscious of that, then what am I to do? Here's the prescribed way in the service of the sanctuary, the type, the parable, the pattern. All right, let's continue to read. Let's read verses 22 and 23. When a ruler has sinned and hath done somewhat through ignorance against any of the commandments of the Lord his God concerning things which should not be done, is guilty, or if his sin whereat he hath sinned come to his knowledge, he shall bring his offering, and is prescribed the offering. And then we come to verses 27 and 28. If any one of the common people sin through ignorance, while he doeth somewhat against any of the commandments of the Lord concerning things which ought not to be done, and be guilty, or if his sin which he hath sinned come to his knowledge, then he shall bring his offering, a kid of the goats, a female without blemish, for his sin which he hath sinned. All right, in each instance. And in these three categories that we have read here, every individual in the camp of Israel and the camp of Israel collectively is covered when the sin which they sin becomes known to them in order that there might be an atonement. Let me illustrate. If you'll turn to Numbers 332. It says there that Eleazar, the son of Aaron, the priest, shall be chief over the chief of the Levites and have oversight of them which keep the charge of the sanctuary. Now that word for chief in Numbers 3:32 is the same word that's translated ruler in the 22nd verse of the 4th chapter. So if a priest as an individual sinned, he was a ruler, and so he would come under that category. And so every individual in Israel is covered either individually or collectively as to how the sin which he hath committed and is recorded, how it can be forgiven and an atonement made. The blood of the sin offering says what? When that blood of the sin offering comes, because it's wholly substitutionary, it shall stand for the individual, it stands for me, and that individual sin offering is killed, what's it saying? The penalty has been paid. Right? What's the wages of sin? That's the decree of God. And so when I put my hand and lean on this sin offering and confess it, I have sinned, even though I did it ignorantly. And that individual, I take the knife and kill it, then I have, the penalty has been paid, but not by me. Something else paid the penalty. Now, what about this record? Or maybe before that, I want to read you a commentary from the commentary on the Old Testament by Keel and Detlish on this particular point. The offerer transferred the consciousness of sin and the desire for forgiveness to the head of the animal that had been brought in his stead by laying one of his hands, and after this the animal was slaughtered and suffered death for him as the wages of sin. This is standard understanding of this procedure. And I might say on the side that Keel and Detlish is what Andreasen used when he quoted in the study of the sanctuary service. It's a recognized commentary of value. All right, now, notice now what actually takes place. The record is what? A report of confession made and forgiveness extended for a sin already recorded in the books, not in the sanctuary. Let me just read it. All right, here an individual out here in the camp of Israel, and he sinned through ignorance. Is there any record in the sanctuary of that sin? No. But where is it recorded? And where are those books? In heaven. But now he comes, and there's another record made. But what does that record say? The price has been paid for that sin. Now let's keep in mind that the services of the sanctuary are a message of a recording of forgiveness for sin. The record of sin is in heaven. This is the means of forgiveness and ultimately cleansing. Now naturally a record of forgiveness indicates that a sin has been committed and the individual has recognized that fact. Now, let's notice the ministration of these sin offerings here in Leviticus, the 4th chapter. Let's begin now with the 13th verse. And if the whole congregation of Israel sin through ignorance, and the thing be hid from the eyes of the assembly, And they have done somewhat against any of the commandments of the Lord concerning things which should not be done and are guilty. When the sin which they have sinned against it is known, then the congregation shall offer a young bullock for the sin offering and bring him before the tabernacle of the congregation. All right? When it's a corporate sin, when the whole nation sins, he's to bring it before the tabernacle of the congregation. Whether it's here or here, he brings it. The elders of the congregation shall lay their hands upon the head of a bullock. You see, it's a big animal. Why? These elders have to put their full weight on that bullock. The head of the bullock before the Lord, and the bullock shall be killed before the Lord. And the priest that is anointed. Now who's that priest? That's the high priest. Shall bring of the blood of the bullock to the tabernacle of the congregation. And the priest shall dip of his finger. Shall dip his finger in some of the blood and sprinkle it seven times before the Lord, even before the veil. All right, right here before this veil, he sprinkles it seven times. Who's on the other side of the veil, symbolically represented? Okay, so it comes here into the presence of God. And he shall put some of the blood upon the horns of the altar which is before the Lord, that is in the tabernacle of the congregation. And shall pour out all the blood at the bottom of the altar of burnt offering, which is at the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. Now what results? And he shall take the fat and does something with it on the altar. And the priest shall make an atonement for them, and it shall be forgiven them. Now let's go back over this process, because this is absolutely important that we understand it. When the whole congregation sins, this is corporate, the bullock is brought, the elders of the congregation put their hand upon that head of that bullock and put their weight upon it, confessing the sin, then it's slain by one of them. The priest, the high priest, comes into this ministry, takes of that blood, goes in here, and comes in here before the veil, sprinkles it seven times before the veil, and touches the horns of this altar. It's saying that the sin of the congregation has been confessed. And then he comes back out, and he pours all the blood at the base of this altar. And they are forgiven. The record of forgiveness is recorded. The forgiveness is there. And the blood is all poured out here, symbolic of the fact that in reality, the whole means of real redemption is going to reside in what this symbolizes. What? The cross. Don't forget that fact. But the record of forgiveness is here. All right. Beg pardon?
Until the day
comes. Well, all right. We're not there yet. We're just in one process. Now let's go to Leviticus 4:22-26. When a ruler has sinned and hath done somewhat through ignorance against any of the commandments of the Lord his God concerning things which should not be done and is guilty, or if his sin wherein he hath sinned come to his knowledge, he shall bring his offering, a kid of the goat, a male without blemish, and he shall lay his head upon the goat, and shall kill it in the place where they kill the burnt offering before the Lord. It is a sin offering. And the priest shall take of the blood of the sin offering with his finger, and shall put it on the horns of the altar of burnt offering, and shall pour out his blood at the bottom of the altar of burnt offering. And he shall burn the fat and so forth. And the priest shall make an atonement for him as concerning his sin, and it shall be forgiven him. And then if you want to follow closely for the individual, the common person, it's the same procedure, just a different animal. All right, let's follow this through. Here comes the individual. He brings his sin offering and he comes here. He puts his hand upon that victim. He leans his weight upon it. It becomes his. And then he kills it. And who takes the blood? The priest, the common priest, not the high priest. The common priest ministers for the individual. And what does he do with the blood? He puts it on the horns of this altar, and the atonement, it results in forgiveness to the individual. The blood is not carried into the sanctuary. All right.
After
he pours it out right here. Well, the fact is that all the source of forgiveness, as far as the source is concerned, comes as a result of the sacrifice here at this altar, the cross. All right. Notice it again. He comes here, puts his hand upon the victim, confesses his sin. He kills the victim. The blood is taken by the common priest, not the high priest. Put only here on the horns of this altar at the base, and he is forgiven. There is no record of transfer of blood for the individual or for the ruler into the sanctuary. That's Scripture. Well, it says here one is a female of the goats, the other is a male of the goats, one's a bullock. In other words, it's the nature of the type of sacrifice that had to be brought that was the difference. There was no difference in the procedures for either the ruler or the common person. It was the nature of the victim that he brought some particular sacrifice. And I'm not interested in any significance there. In fact, I can't find any significance in that except in a graded form.
Were these sin offerings only?
That's right. These are sin offerings. And I want you to notice, I'm coming back again to the fact that on this sin offering for the individual and the ruler, the record was not transferred to the sanctuary. The record was left here of forgiveness at this altar.
At the altar,
offering a burnt offering in the court. What? That's right here. That's the cross. But the record of sin was still in the books. I'll follow through carefully. You want clarification or you want to hold this in for discussion? All right.
Was that record of the priest or the ruler? No, the priest, you know, that had to have the anointing priest.
That's a corp. That's the corporate.
All right, yeah. But that was still in the book too, wasn't it?
Right. Right. Right, right. They're in the books. The sin is in the books. All right. What's that? Well, I'm talking about the books. They're recorded there in the books. We'll discuss the books a little later on, but I want you to know that the sin is recorded at the time it's committed. The forgiveness is extended when we come to recognize it, whether it be a corporate recognition or whether it be an individual recognition. But what I want to point out, and I reemphasize again, that for the corporate, the record went in here of the corporate forgiveness. For individual forgiveness, it stayed there. We'll get to that. All right, now let's go one step further. What is this saying? It's saying simply that a sinner can be one with God through the sin offering, free from guilt as if he had never sinned. He left his sin here. He went off as if he had never sinned. Now, it is true that his sin may be ever before him, but also the knowledge of God's forgiveness. You and I may be conscious of the sins that we've committed, that have been come to our mind, terrible as they may be, but we can also be conscious that the forgiveness of God has been extended when we've come to Him. The atonement takes place for the individual at the altar in the court. No record is ever made in the sanctuary, as no blood was ever taken in, but the record of that sin is in the books of heaven. Now it's obvious there's a gap. Right? There's a gap. There's a gap from the fact that here my forgiveness is recorded. It's not in the sanctuary, but the sin that I did is up here in the books. Now let's find out what the law of the sin offering was. Turn to Leviticus 6. Notice verses 25 and 26 first. Speak unto Aaron and to his son, saying, this is the law of the sin offering. In the place where the burnt offering is killed, shall the sin offering be killed before the Lord. It is most holy. The priest that offereth it for sin shall eat it. In the holy place shall it be eaten, in the court of the tabernacle of the congregation. Where is it going to be eaten? In the court of the tabernacle of the congregation. Right here. This court represents what? The earth. Interesting. Now, let's go one step further to find out what the picture is. Turn to the 10th chapter of Leviticus. Beginning with the 16th verse. And Moses diligently sought the goat of the sin offering, and behold, it was burnt. And he was angry with Eleazar and Ithamar, the sons of Aaron, which were left alive, saying, all right, now who was the high priest at this time? Aaron. And the sons would be what? Common priest. All right, now, what does he say? Moses got angry because of this violation of this type. Wherefore have ye not eaten the sin offering in the holy place, seeing it is most holy, and God hath given it you to bear the iniquity of the congregation and to make atonement for them before the Lord. Behold, the blood of it was not brought within the holy. Ye should indeed have eaten it in the holy as I commanded. All right, he says the common priest, you are given the responsibility to bear the iniquity. And when the blood is not taken in, you should have eaten it. Well, we find that the sin offering was never eaten by the high priest. Who only ate of the sin offering? The common priest. Now remember, the high priest never ate of the sin offering. Whenever he officiated a sin offering for corporate, it went in. For the individual, the common priest ate. Now there's a difference of role. And it was eaten in the court. The common priest partook of that sin offering in the court. Now let's notice the application. Jesus is both priest and high priest. Turn to his work as priest, Luke 5. Beginning with the 18th verse. And behold, men brought in a bed a man which was taken in palsy, and they sought means to bring him in, delay him before him, that's Jesus. And when they could not find by what way they might bring him in because of the multitude, they went up on the housetop and let him down through the tiling with his couch into the midst before Jesus. And when he saw their faith, he said unto them, man, thy sins are forgiven thee. And the scribes and the Pharisees began to reason, saying, who is this which speaketh blasphemies? Who can forgive sins but God alone? And when Jesus perceived their thoughts, he answering said unto them, what reason ye in your hearts? Whether it is easier to say, thy sins be forgiven thee, or to say, rise up and walk? But that ye may know that the Son of Man hath power upon earth to forgive sins, he saith unto the sick with palsy, I say unto thee, arise and take up thy couch and go into thy house. That you might know what? That the Son of Man hath power where? On earth to do what? All right? Where, and this is an individual, right? It's not the nation of Israel, it's an individual. Where was the individual sin taken care of? In the court, and the court represents what? The earth, and who ministered? The common priest. Was Jesus yet a high priest at this time? He was ministering as a common priest on this earth, and he says, I have power to forgive sins. All right, what step further did he take? 2 Corinthians 5:21, he hath been made sin for us who knew no sin, that we might be made the righteousness of God in him. Hebrews 2:14-17, wherefore in all things he was made like unto his brethren, inasmuch as they partook of what? Flesh and blood. What did he do? He took part of the same. What did he do really? He ate our flesh. He became one of us. The common priest that could forgive. Interesting, isn't it? The whole thing at the altar is this. Now if he, as the priest, ate, became sin for us, the sin offering, the words are interchangeable, he partook of it, then who's going to stand for me? Who's going to stand for me?
Christ.
Christ. Now, let's go one step further. As the high priest, what does he do? Hebrews 7:26. Hebrews 7:26. Let's read the 25th verse also. Wherefore he is able to save them to the uttermost that come unto God by him, seeing he ever liveth to make intercession for them. For such an high priest became us. What did the high priest do? He became us. It was necessary that he be taken from among men. He became us. But what is he? Holy, harmless, undefiled, separate from sinners, made higher than the heavens. Ah, friend, when the high priest ministered, he never partook of the victims. Showing that as the high priest, he would be holy, harmless, and undefiled. He had conquered sin. He had gone to heaven and glorified humanity, untouched, unmarred by sin. And that was the high priest that became us, that he could be there making internal intercession, the one who did not sin. Now we're told further in Hebrews 9:24, for Christ is not entered into the holy places made with hands, which are the figures of the patterns of the true, but into heaven itself, now to appear in the presence of God for us. Ah, friend, the picture is the picture of that Christ going there into the presence of God for us. And he's there for us. The gap, here I come. There's a gap here. My record is there. My confession is here. And who spans the gap? Jesus Christ. And the only way that that gap can be spanned is by Jesus Christ. Now it comes, and what's it telling us, the sanctuary? The sanctuary is telling us, the sanctuary given to Israel, that those that are going to be saved and can face the record of sin are those that have made their reconciliation in Jesus Christ. Now tell me, where else can you find redemption? The redemption that's in Christ Jesus. All right, we can pause at this point.